Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, November 21st, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Sandra Nyairam.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A somber mood is hanging over the mining town of Kwekwe following a stampede that left 11 prophetic healing and deliverance worshippers dead last night.
It's a somber atmosphere here, especially in the identity suburb of Mbizo. Emotions are running high. Some of the people have really been expressing anger towards the police.
Local think tank, the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, says President Robert Mugabe does not have constitutional powers to fire his deputy, Joyce Mujuru, as is being demanded by his wife, Grace, and others in an opposing camp.
So President Mugabe, on his own, from the reading, this literal reading of the constitution, he doesn't have those powers. I also looked at the transitional clauses, and it is not clear.
And Zimbabweans in the United States are celebrating President Barack Obama's sweeping changes to U.S. immigration policy, giving legal stay to people who have been in America illegally.
We don't see Ebola as a terrorist who is waging a guerrilla type of war. So it will come, and then you have to be ready, you contain it, it goes, let's come back again.
A somber mood was hanging over the mining town of Kwekwe today following a stampede that left 11 prophetic healing and deliverance worshippers dead, as church leader Walter Magaya expressed his condolences and offered financial assistance for the burial of the victims. The stampede occurred after the church service at Mbizo Stadium late yesterday, and some Kwekwe residents are blaming it on the police. Assistant Inspector Emmanuel Mahoko in the Midlands refused to comment. Magaya told a news conference this evening that his church has donated $1,000 to each bereaved family for burial purposes. He expressed grief and said he was heartbroken over the incident. Reporter Ntungameli Nkomo reached correspondent Taurai Shava in Kwekwe for more details.
It's a somber atmosphere here, especially in the identity suburb of Mbizo. Emotions are running high. Some of the people have really been expressing anger towards the police. They are actually accusing the police of having caused the tragic incident yesterday. We are getting conflicting reports. I've spoken to some witnesses, people who say they were there in the stadium. They were saying actually what triggered this was that the police were prohibiting people from exiting through the wider gate, and they were forcing them to go through the smaller gate, and the stampede started then. But I'm also getting information that the police used tear gas. That's from some witnesses. But I could not verify this with the police. Why I'm saying it's they are conflicting reports is because some people who are also witnesses say that the police were not armed. It's actually the constabulary. It was not the normal police force that was there at the event, but the constabulary, those that are normally, that are commonly referred to as the neighborhood watch. Those are the guys who were there at the incident.
Is there a particular bereaved family that you managed to speak to?
Yes, I visited the home of Rachel Sinei, a 16-year-old girl who was informed too. She's among those who died in the incident. I spoke to her uncle, Mr. Klopas Manamike, who said the family is really sad. It's a tragic event incident to the family. They are sad. They are devastated. The uncle actually said that he described Rachel as a very obedient, disciplined girl, God-loving girl, and he said it was unfortunate that she died under such circumstances. But he said the family would get consolation from the fact that perhaps this was God's plan. What makes Rachel's case more tragic is that a mother right now is in hospital. She recently gave birth to a stillborn baby. She's in hospital in Gweru, and she's in such a state that she's unable to talk. And I've been told that as we speak right now, she doesn't know yet that her daughter passed away in the tragic incident yesterday.
Studio 7 correspondent Taura Ishava on the line with reporter Ntunga Milinkomo from Kwekwe.
President Robert Mugabe does not have constitutional powers to fire his deputy Joyce Mujuru, as is being demanded by his wife Grace and others in the ZANU-PF faction, said to be backing the ascendancy of Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa as Mr. Mugabe's heir apparent. Local think tank the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute says this explains the attacks the First Lady has been leading in trying to force Mrs. Mujuru to resign from her position. Thomas Cheripasi has more details from the capital.
Speaking to Studio 7 in Harare earlier today, director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, Pedzisai Ruhanya, said the country's new constitution, adopted at a referendum ahead of last year's elections, does not give President Mugabe the power to dismiss beleaguered Vice President Mujuru. First Lady Grace Mugabe, who is said to become the boss of ZANU-PF's Women's League at the ruling party's elective congress set for next month, has repeatedly called for Mrs. Mujuru's ouster, accusing her of corruption, incompetence, and allegedly plotting to assassinate her husband. This week, the First Lady called on Mr. Mugabe to fire Mrs. Mujuru, but Ruhanya says that is a no-go area.
It is very clear that the Senate and the National Assembly, that is Parliament, by a joint resolution passed by all, by at least one half of their total membership. And by total membership, it also includes the MDC. The members of the MDC, they will also be implicated in the removal of the president or vice president. So President Mugabe, on his own, from the reading, this literal reading of the constitution, he doesn't have those powers. I also looked at the transitional clauses, and it is not clearly expressed or clearly stated, because this is a serious matter. It doesn't need interpretation. It must be very clear. The steps that are supposed to be used when you want to remove a president of the country or a vice president of the country. And from the reading of this constitution, it's clear that the vice president cannot be removed in a manner that the First Lady is talking about. This is why they are saying that she must remove Debi Dambuye, that she must resign on her own. That's why she is acting vice president in his absence.
Ruhanya added that Mr. Mugabe may also find it difficult to find support in both houses of parliament, arguing that Mrs. Mujuru still has control in both houses.
I don't think they will have that capacity, because she also commands a lot of sympathizers. If you look at those chairpersons, those people who have been removed in the provinces, they are part of her followers.
But independent political analyst Takura Jangaja told Studio 7 by phone that the one who has the power to appoint also has the power to disappoint. Some political analysts say the internal fissures in ZANU-PF ahead of its congress were exacerbated by President Mugabe's failure to groom a successor, as was done by other regional leaders like Mwalimu Julius Nyerere, avoiding fissures that are seen by many to be destroying the ZANU-PF fabric. Mujuru and Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa are reportedly leading factions angling to succeed Mr. Mugabe when he eventually leaves office. But the two faction leaders have publicly denied this, saying they are all rallying behind President Mugabe. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Thanks, Thomas. Meanwhile, the European Union ambassador to Zimbabwe, Philip Van Dam, says there's nothing unusual about the ongoing infighting in ZANU-PF ahead of the party's congress in December. Mr. Van Dam says the nature of politics the world over means at one stage or the other, opponents will fight for political space, as is happening in the ruling party. Ivan Chifera has details from Harare.
Responding to questions after making a presentation on the future of Zimbabwe-European Union relations at the Southern African Political and Economic Series Trust, Van Dem said, while it is not the duty of diplomats to discuss internal party politics, what's happening in ZANU-PF is not unusual in politics.
I have been asked the last couple of weeks also to by journalists, what's the impact of factionalism? I don't know. I mean, all over the world, parties fight for power. Everywhere in the world, within parties, people fight for power. I don't know what will be the outcome. I leave it to the experts here to speculate about the outcome of factionalism. So I don't know what will be the impact of that.
The international community is obviously watching events in Harare closely, but has largely been silent as the infighting in ZANU-PF intensifies ahead of its elective congress in December. First Lady Grace Mugabe has intimated in her speeches attacking Vice President Joyce Mujuru that her husband's deputy has been working with some Western countries in an effort to eliminate President Mugabe from office. Several representatives of foreign governments approached by Studio 7 refused to comment, saying the infighting was an internal matter. Some political analysts told Studio 7, while the international community is extremely concerned about the goings on in ZANU-PF, they will not comment publicly, as doing so would be violating the law on diplomatic relations. Political commentator Blessing Vava says the international community does not want to be seen to be interfering in Zimbabwe's internal politics.
I think the international community is very much concerned about what is happening in ZANU-PF, but they wouldn't want to be seen involved in the internal affairs of ZANU-PF until the party goes for its congress.
Vava says with President Robert Mugabe now 90 years old, many Zimbabweans and the international community are anxious to know who would take charge of the ruling party and possibly the country. He said even though the EU has lifted sanctions on Zimbabwe, ZANU-PF is likely to continue with its lookist policy after the Congress.
I don't think that there will be much of the changes that we should expect at the ZANU-PF Congress. As we have seen, ZANU-PF is very much willing to work with the East rather than the West. So I'm not seeing any policy shifts in terms of ZANU-PF's foreign policy.
But other experts told Studio 7 that ZANU-PF looks keen to work with European and international partners, as witnessed by the recent visits by business delegations from Britain and Denmark. Van Dem said the EU is already supporting Zimbabwe in a number of areas, including the implementation of the International Monetary Fund's Staff Monitored Program. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Zimbabweans living in America have welcomed President Barack Obama's executive order granting undocumented and law-abiding immigrants who have been staying in the country for 5 years a temporary deportation reprieve. Some of those who have been staying in the country for a long time without regularizing their status told Studio 7 the executive order gives them a chance to become legal USA residents. President Obama laid out his plan in a White House speech last night, bypassing Congress and enraging Republicans who say they will do all in their power to scuttle his plan.
If you've been in America for more than 5 years, if you have children who are American citizens or legal residents, if you register, pass a criminal background check, and you're willing to pay your fair share of taxes, you'll be able to apply to stay in this country temporarily without fear of deportation. You can come out of the shadows and get right with the law.
The executive order, which will take effect in around 6 months, offers temporary work permits to around 4.7 million immigrants who entered the country illegally. Republicans slammed the president's action as amnesty, saying it will encourage new waves of illegal immigration. Many vowed an all-out fight to repeal the plan. But most Zimbabweans living in America, including Duma Fimema of the Association of Zimbabweans Living Abroad, says there are thousands of undocumented Zimbabweans staying illegally in the country who are set to benefit from the presidential decree.
There are Zimbabweans that are going to benefit. The only thing we don't know is, because he mentioned that it's not going to benefit those who came recently, but most Zimbabweans here have been here for years, maybe 10 years plus. that group of Zimbabweans will definitely benefit from this immigration executive action.
Roughly how many people are we talking about here?
That's difficult to come up with a number. I know that maybe about 10 years ago, we tried to work with Zimbabweans here in the United States through the State Department to get them some kind of immigration relief. At that time, the estimates were around 45,000. I know in between there have been changes, like some Zimbabweans have crossed over into Canada and then some came in again. So it's kind of difficult to say a number at this time.
For those that are likely to benefit, what can you tell them?
Come out of the shadows, go and register with the government as soon as they unveil the process of registration.
That was Dumapi Mema of the Association of Zimbabweans Living Abroad, speaking with Studio 7 from Dallas, Texas.
His sentiments were echoed by Dr. Isaac Mwase, a member of the African Immigrants Caucus, who added that most Africans are happy with President Obama's immigration plan.
We support the president's action and we're delighted that he took a step that he was forced to take because Congress has failed to act. And the African Immigrant Caucus is delighted that the president has taken this step, which was overdue.
Do you see Zimbabweans benefiting from this development?
Certainly, Zimbabwean, those who have come to America from Zimbabwe are going to benefit just as others from other countries. The majority of people from Zimbabwe who are in the United States usually come as students. They may overstay their visas. And those that are out of status can take advantage of this executive decision by President Obama to get their papers in order. But our hope is that Congress will work with the president in enacting comprehensive immigration legislation so that those that are in the shadows can become part of American life. This is a nation of immigrants, and it's good that leaders are doing what's necessary to help everyone participate in the American dream.
That was Dr. Isaac Mwase, a member of the African Immigrants Caucus, speaking with Studio 7 from Baltimore, Maryland, USA.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency. Coming up,
an African health expert says every African country should be prepared for a possible Ebola outbreak.
But first, Chris, we take a look at regional and international news.
Burkina Faso's former president Blaise Compaoré has gone to Morocco from Ivory Coast, where he initially sought refuge after being ousted 3 weeks ago.
The Nigerian House of Representatives has rejected President Goodluck Jonathan's request to extend the state of emergency in three northeastern states where the army has been battling the militant Islamist group Boko Haram. The country's main opposition party said yesterday the special powers were a complete failure at curbing the Islamist violence in the region.
And the World Health Organization has declared an end to the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The outbreak, unrelated to the one affecting West Africa, was centered in Congo's northwestern Equatorial province and killed at least 49 people.
More than 5,000 people have died from Ebola, most of them from the West African countries of Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea. Two have died in the United States. Ebola, first identified in 1976 in the Democratic Republic of Congo, then known as Zaire, has reappeared several times over the years, but the recent outbreak that started in March this year has been described as the worst to date. The viral disease is said to spread through fluids of an infected person has disrupted traditional practices of burial and greeting as people try to heed calls of prevention. Many economies have also suffered as countries impose restrictions on flights and people from affected countries. Among those who first identified the disease is Dr. Malonga Myatudila of the DRC, a public health specialist who participated in a recent town hall on Ebola hosted by the Voice of America. Myatudila tells Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalele the recent outbreak is a result of complacency and denial, and that no country can afford to ignore it.
It didn't change the way it attacks. As I said, the way we respond, this is what is different this time.
Mm-hmm.
Two mistakes: delay and inappropriate response.
What do you think is the reason it came back with the intensity that it did?
You have to see Ebola as a terrorist who is waging a guerrilla type of war. So it will come, and then if you're ready, you're ready, you contain it, it goes, and it's come back again to hit you, and then it disappears. It does that all the time. So this time it came, and then we didn't pay attention.
It originated in DRC.
Mm-hmm. It hit Central Africa many times. So first time it was DRC, and then the following month, Sudan. And then a few months later, Uganda. And then Gabon. And then DRC again. And then Congo-Brazzaville. And then, so it does that all the time. So we know how this virus behaves. And then we have developed the appropriate response. We know that to fight Ebola, you have to be quick. At this time, we didn't do that.
Knowing how dangerous this disease is, why was the reaction so slow?
I think we passed through a period of denial because, again, we said, this is West Africa. So the mood was, no, it cannot be that because Ebola has never struck us. It appears in Central Africa. We are West Africa. We are not Central Africa. So that was the denial. Even when the test came back, this is Ebola. I said, no, no, no. You must be wrong. So because of that denial, we wasted time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was going from East Guinea and then enters Liberia and Sierra Leone.
From what I'm understanding, there are several efforts to create either a vaccine or some kind of cure. And you said maybe by 2016
yeah,
there might
because, be? Because we have been asking the big companies to help us with vaccine, but there was no commercial incentive to do that. Because as I said, up to now, most of the time the crisis will last less than 3 months, and then there are going to be something like 500 people who are going to die. So there is no incentive to invest in research. But now that Ebola has become a global disease, now you can understand why big companies are going to be interested in investing. It's not a technical problem, it's a financial problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, a country like Zimbabwe, which has not had a case of Ebola, maybe countries in Southern Africa in general, East Africa, they're looking on and they're wondering, when is it coming? Is it coming? What do you know about the way it moves?
Yeah, compare Zimbabwe and the United States and Dallas. Let's not forget that our planet is a very, very small planet. We are talking about becoming a global village. So we have to put that in our mind. These frontiers, like between Zimbabwe and Zambia, these frontiers are artificial. So every nation in this world should be ready to see Ebola popping in Germany, Sweden, Japan. That's possible now. Now we should become aware that Ebola is not a disease of the others. You remember when AIDS started, the general mood was, oh, AIDS is a problem of those people, homosexual. That means I'm immune to AIDS. The history showed us that AIDS attacks everybody.
Dr. Malonga Myatudila is a former World Bank public health specialist from the Democratic Republic of Congo. He spoke with Studio 7's Ndimiake Mwakalele from Washington following a town hall on Ebola hosted by the Voice of America.
In that respect, Zimbabwe is also vulnerable to an Ebola outbreak, according to Dr. Malonga Myatudila. Addressing an Ebola meeting in Bulawayo yesterday, epidemiology director in the health ministry, Dr. Portia Manangazire, said Harare is concerned by the number of people using illegal crossing points to enter the country. She said because border jumpers are not screened like other travelers, they could bring the virus into the country. Addressing the same meeting, Deputy Health Minister Paul Chimedza said Harare is also worried by asylum seekers from countries like the Democratic Republic of Congo who could have left the country and came back using illegal crossing points. Meanwhile, some Zimbabwean health professionals have snubbed huge allowances being offered by the World Health Organization so they could go and help in Ebola-affected countries. Dr. Trevor Moyo tells Studio 7 that some medical personnel fear for their lives.
Yeah, well, the ministry or government, they say, has been enticing people with good sums of money to participate in this UN mission visa against the Ebola. But the uptake is very limited based on fears of dying. The ministry is scouting around for people, but people are not taking up the challenge or the request.
So when you say people, are these only doctors or also nurses?
Doctors and nurses, specialists in health, especially in the health sector.
How much are they offering them?
It's quite a good sum, close to 1,000 in a day. So the money is quite attractive to a Zimbabwean, but you have to pay for your life, you know.
That was Dr. Trevor Moyo, a Zimbabwean medical doctor, speaking with Studio 7 from Bulawayo.
The curtain comes down, Chris, this weekend on what has been an exciting 2014 Kasolaga Premier Soccer League program. Michael Kariati tells us who he thinks will win the league title.
For the third year running, the champions of Zimbabwean football will be crowned on the last day of play as the two leading teams, ZPC Kariba and Dynamos, are separated by only 2 points, with only one game remaining. The winner will only be known at around 16:45 p.m. on Sunday, as the title race goes to the wire. But events on the ground suggest that ZPC Kariba win the championship. Their fans are ecstatic about the status quo. Miriam Mashayamombe shares with us the mood in the ZPC camp. The team that was promoted into the premiership this season only needed a draw against Capes United in their game at Gwanzura Stadium. But coach Saul Chaminuka said they are going all out for victory to prove that they are the real champions of Zimbabwean football. In fact, Chaminuka, whose team beat their closest rivals Dynamos home and away, believed they should have wrapped up the title long back had they used all the opportunities that came their way.
I tell you, I keep talking about that. I think we could have won maybe 2-3 other games here.
But Chaminuka has to be warned that the title is won when the final whistle has been blown, as Dynamos can still win the title should they win against Zaumine and ZPC Starter in their game against the Green Machine. Dynamos coach Kalisto Pasua is not promising much, but says they are taking the game against Zaumine as any of the matches they've played this season.
Yeah, like I've been preaching every day, we take every game as it comes.
While the league championship race looked like all but sealed, the fight for survival is at its most intense, with six teams, Triangle and Chapungo, on 37 points, Buffaloes on 36 points, Harare City and Shabani Mine on 35 points, as well as Black Rhinos on 34 points, all facing the chop. The most interesting fixture is the Midlands showdown, in which Triangle and Shabani face each other, with the team that loses likely to go down the drain. But Shabani Mine supporters believe their team is in the premiership to stay. Chapungu travel to Hatfield grounds for a date with troubled Highlanders, and a loss for the Air Force of Zimbabwe side will leave them in serious danger of being relegated. On that premise, Chapungu could also be joined by another Defence Forces team, Black Rhinos, who face already relegated but stubborn Band Rovers at Rimuka Stadium. It would be cruel for the Kakuma football followers not to have premiership action 2015, but the truth is that Rhinos have not been playing well to the extent that even the 3 points against Bantu Rovers can still not save them. Motshunga's Buffaloes look safe with a home game against Wange, while Harare City, on the strength of their performance in the Chibuku Super Cup final, can survive with a win over Chicken Inn.
Thank you, Michael. It looks like it's going to be a very exciting weekend, Chris. Unfortunately, time is not on our side. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington.
And I'm Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.